Hi, my name is Angela Giampolo, and I go by Philly Gay Lawyer. I'm licensed in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and today we'll be talking about macro cross-border planning challenges related specifically to the LGBTQ community. So a little bit about me and how I got to do this kind of work. I'm international, I guess, by birth, by nature. I was born in the U.S., but I don't remember it. And when I was 2, we moved to a small town in Quebec, where my mother, Solange Cassette, very French-Canadian, was born and grew up there during sort of my foundational years. And despite my height, not that you know this, but I'm 4'11", despite my height, I played basketball overseas and went to Sweden, Finland, blew out both knees, and came back to the U.S. after doing that travel. And then eventually went to law school, took a couple of years off before going to law school and worked at law firms, also on international matters. And being French-Canadian by birth, we remember the Rwandan genocide that happened in 94 like it was yesterday. And I was told myself if I went to law school that I would do some work for the United Nations and the Rwandan genocide. So while in law school, I worked for about a year and a half at the United Nations in Arusha, Tanzania, also where it's illegal to be gay, and then got a Master's of Law in Chinese Law in Beijing and worked in human trafficking and lived in Beijing for a little over a year, also where it's not safe to be gay. And so a lot of the places that were taking me for work or other related reasons were not safe for the LGBT community, and I didn't realize then how much it would impress upon my career, but came back to the U.S. after all of that and decided to start a law firm geared towards the LGBTQ community for all of our legal needs. And in doing so, I do a lot of work that is very specific to the LGBT community. So this particular seminar is close to my heart. First and foremost, before you can do international estate planning, there are a lot of immigration considerations before you get to the point where your client is doing estate planning work. So this seminar will hit on 3 major topics and then a lot of subtopics underneath, but LGBT immigration to the U.S., second, cross-border considerations, so whether your client is going back and forth, and then thirdly, the actual estate planning piece. So from immigration to the U.S., first and foremost, international marriage equality. So while the United States has only recently started to legally recognize same-sex marriage across the country with the Obergefell decision, not every country does. And when people are immigrating from a country that does not recognize marriage equality or from a country where it would have been illegal to attempt to marry, our immigration policies don't recognize their lack of rights causing their lack of marriage. It's still, despite the current administration, it's still America's policy that the place where the marriage was celebrated, place of celebration, determines whether the marriage is recognized for immigration purposes. So it's justified as equal protection because it's the same standard for opposite sex applicants. However, opposite sex applicants don't have to deal with laws forbidding them to marry solely based on their orientation. For an immigrant to receive derivative refugee status, the person does not need to meet all of the refugee eligibility requirements, but they must be admissible to the United States and demonstrate a spousal relationship or a child of an admitted refugee at the time of their admission. With LGBT couples specifically fleeing prosecution from countries that criminalize their relationship, like Tanzania, for instance, we see that happening right now with a huge crackdown, and prosecute if they attempt to get married. The couple is likely to be separated when they get here because they have no means of obtaining or demonstrating a spousal relationship when they arrive here in the U.S., which is separate from the next bullet point, family-based green cards. So there's a famous couple, Richard Adams and Anthony Sullivan, who were able to get married, shockingly, in Boulder, Colorado in 1975. Anthony was Australian and applied for his family-based green card, but was denied. the couple filed suit against the INS, and after a few appeals, the final decision was decided on the grounds that their marriage did not fulfill the spousal requirements for INS. Ironically, to all of us who jurisprudentially are focused on LGBT issues, the judge who wrote that opinion against Sullivan was the retired Honorable Anthony Kennedy, who would, as we all know, later go on to write the opinions of both Edie Windsor and Jim Obergefell. Richard, the American, passed away before marriage equality, but in 2014, Anthony filed a motion with the U.S. Citizen and Immigration Services to reconsider Richard's petition posthumously, as Richard was the American citizen. In April 2016, Anthony finally received his green card. Immigration Services has updated its policies to follow Windsor and Obergefell to recognize same-sex couples as spouses for immigration purposes. And today, even if an applicant is only engaged to a person, as has always been true for opposite-sex couples, the fiancé visa is eligible. Asylum, Section 101A42 of the Immigration and Nationality Act classifies a person outside of their country of nationality who is unable or unwilling to return to his or her country of nationality because of persecution or a well-founded fear of said persecution on account of race, religion, nationality, membership in a particular social group, or political opinion as a refugee if they are trying to enter the U.S. An asylum seeker if they are already in the U.S. or arriving at a U.S. port of entry. We do not have, post the current administration, we do not have updated reports from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, but if we go to previous reports, there are approximately 3,500 LGBT refugees arriving annually and 1,250 others granted asylum. But again, these numbers are old, and we don't know when we'll get updated numbers. In response to the refugee crisis during World War II, United States Congress opened our borders to give asylum to the refugees by passing the Displaced Persons Act of 1948. They have expanded the U.S. commitment to providing asylum to refugees in the Refugee Act of 53, the Fair Use Refugee Act of 60, and adopting the UN protocol relating to the status of refugees in 68. And establishing formal refugee and asylum programs through our Refugee Act of 1980. LGBT refugees may flee their countries due to prosecution based on their sexual orientation or gender identity, or for the same reasons as any other refugees, such as ethnic conflict, political unrest, and lack of religious freedom. However, in countries where they seek safety, LGBT refugees often risk being harassed, hurt, or even killed. So these are the countries where they're seeking safety. They're leaving their country of danger and seeking safety in another country, but they still, much more than other refugees, risk being harassed, hurt, or even killed. They can be targeted by other refugees, host communities, the people meant to host them, and even government officials and police. Due to the backlog of cases, the average wait time to see an immigration judge is 667 days and 876 days in large metropolitan cities. The wait time is only getting worse, especially in this particular administration, and it's detrimental to someone's case because pro bono lawyers tend to change firms often from burnout. Judges tend to retire or transfer. Witnesses over the course of 876 days are easily lost. And overall, they're just your average normal systematic court delays. But for some, they spend a majority of all of that time in detainment centers. The Immigration Detention, the Continuing Appropriations Act of 2014 states that the Act budget shall maintain a level of not less than 34,000 detention beds. This has been interpreted as a mandate to detain 34,000 immigrants instead of just detaining only immigrants who may pose a threat to the community. So because it reads, shall maintain a level of not less than 34 detention beds, it has become a mandate that we need at least 34,000 detainees. The Center for American Progress found that transgender women, specifically transgender women of color, are most greatly affected, evident in the fact that they are disproportionately detained in these immigration centers. In June 2015, Immigration and Customs Enforcement issued a transgender care memorandum entitled Further Guidance Regarding the Care of Transgender Detainees, Establishing Their Current Enforcement and Removal Operations Policies and Procedures for the Custody and Care of Transgender Individuals in Detention Facilities to provide protection for LGBT detainees, including continued health care, housing with their particular gender identity, and protection from harassment. However, with this particular administration, since 2016, this guidance and these policies are not being followed. Despite testimony before U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, finding that the Department of Homeland Security and Immigration and Customs Enforcement facilities were not following these procedures, and the guards physically and verbally abused detainees. While they are being detained and dealing with all of these injustices, their chances of gaining admittance to the country starts to weaken as witnesses disappear, lawyers leave, retire, and judges get relocated. So this particular image shows us how a pathway to the United States, either through marriage or asylum. Now, marriage-based green cards and refugee status are two ways that a person who is fleeing prosecution for their sexual orientation can start a better life here in the U.S. As you can see from the chart, there are hurdles that they have to face to gain admittance, and those hurdles tend to be out of their control and hard to overcome. It would take action, which at this point will not happen, by the President, Congress, and the Supreme Court to be able to lower some of these barriers, and it's not certain that even if they were lowered, that it would completely fix the issues. Now, emigrating from the U.S., so traveling to other countries has the possibility of being very familiar to the American immigration process. The European Convention of Human Rights and UN Population Division try to help everyone's immigration experience, but it'll always come down to the individual country that you're choosing to immigrate to, because just like us, they have the right to secure their borders as they wish. The European Convention of Human Rights, immigrating from the United States will require different preparations for every country. If your client's traveling to Europe, the Convention for the Protection of Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms gives them protection that they will not be infringed on in terms of their human rights as an immigrant. The UN Population Division also helps people work to reassign asylum seekers and ensure the fair and swift assistance to refugees. Their New York Declaration for Refugees and Migrants affirms Universal Declaration of Human Rights commitment to ensure full respect and protection for their human rights, fundamental freedoms to immigrants and member states. If your client's immigrating to a country dedicated to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, you can be assured that your client will be treated humanely for the duration of their immigration process. And lastly, individual border control. Best practice to follow when immigrating to a country is to advise your client to research that country's immigration policies in advance of setting sights or being married to immigrating to that particular country. Every treaty has guidelines and expectations, but if they're not taking away your human rights, they can control their border in any way that they please. So there's a huge disparity between complete removal of any human rights protection and it's still not being an easy immigration process. So it's important to research your client's specific situation, whether they're immigrating for work, retirement, and then choosing a country that fits all of their particular considerations. So there's still a lot of work to accomplish, especially given the change in policies over the last couple of years. Helpful in doing so are activist groups. Activist groups are a key player in protecting people while waiting for change by infiltrating criminalizing countries Again, Tanzania is the one that pops to mind right now, to get LGBT citizens to safety. They also are key players in promoting and advocating for the changes that refugees are actively waiting for. They help spread information to both educate your average human as well as educating politicians and legislators about the injustices occurring around the world. In places like the US, public protest and involvement in the political system is where change will derive and its activists will start to help. Policy change is instrumental in handling of refugees. Asylum laws need to be changed to allow people in danger to find safety when they actually call out for help. The term spouse needs to be incorporated to include people so that a marriage certificate is not the only way a married couple can stay together as they flee prosecution in their native country. Detention policies need to be strictly followed so that we're not providing additional distress to people who are trying to run away from that very same treatment that they receive in our detention centers. And bed mandates should be amended to include what qualifies the need to detain an asylum seeker so that we're not constantly trying to meet our $34,000 bed limit. Finally, immigration courts need more funding so that they can become more quick, efficient, and seamless. And the wait time for a hearing is enough to keep up with reality so as to not jeopardize chance of entry by losing of witnesses, judges retiring, and lawyers changing over. Power of information drives change. The more people who know and understand these issues that need to be addressed, the more pressure there is on governments and therefore their politicians to make said changes. Activist groups in the UN are constantly working on collecting data, gathering stories, finding the best practices, and then sharing them worldwide and across every avenue they can, NGOs, activist groups, legislatures. The more that people know, the faster we'll move towards a globalized standard on human rights and international cooperation on estate planning. Now, this is the second bullet point. For your clients to understand that there are countries that are not LGBT friendly and to know how to avoid issues abroad. So even if a different politician who was more LGBT friendly had become president in 2016, ultimately the entire world predominantly is not LGBT friendly. And a lot of the estate planning documents that I used to do before, I still do, because there's a very good chance that my client will find themselves injured on the Great Wall of China where their marriage is not recognized. And so to be fully cognizant of the fact that only 21 countries, 28 now, actually 28 countries recognize same-sex marriage, and only 13 countries have fully embraced LGBT citizens in terms of giving them employment discrimination and protections. There are still 73 countries that define homosexuality as a crime or some sort of subgroup as a crime, be it promoting of propaganda of homosexuality. But clearly, the majority of the world is not LGBT friendly. LGBT inclusive countries, obviously there are some. 1996, South Africa became the first country to embody sexual orientation as a protected class within their constitution. Today, there are 13 countries that have specified that discrimination laws protect one's sexual orientation. The Netherlands became the first country in the world to recognize same-sex marriage in 2000, and 17 years later, they have acceptance rights organizations and policies. South American countries such as Brazil and Argentina embrace the LGBT community and now even allow people to legally declare their gender. So in Argentina was the first country to allow up to four genders that they acknowledge and recognize, and the person could self-select. They did not have to go through costly and oftentimes humiliating court procedures in order to declare their gender. LGBT accepting countries There are 21 countries that...
Esquire CLE's first verification code is Burger. B-U-R-G-E-R. Burger. Esquire CLE's first verification code is Burger. B-U-R-G-E-R. Please take a moment and write this down.
Recognize same-sex marriage. It's sad to say, but the United States fell very late into this category. There are still no federal... There are federal hate crime laws enacted in the U.S., but almost 200 anti-LGBT bills have been introduced in state legislatures since marriage equality. And some as explicit as Indiana's law allowing denial of public services and the infamous North Carolina bathroom bills. There are several LGBT hostile countries. Currently, 73 countries have outlawed homosexuality, with Chad being the most recent addition to that list, and India being the most recent off that list. Countries are slowly starting to reexamine their laws, like India, outlawing homosexuality, but the results are not always what we hope for. For some of the countries who, even those who don't criminalize homosexual relations, you don't have to be in any relation with someone of the same sex. There are 17 countries that criminalize just the spread of LGBT propaganda, most famous being Russia. Propaganda in these states could be acts such as just holding hands, kissing a friend, advocating for equal rights, being at a protest, and talking about, just simply talking about LGBT issues. So again, when I lived in China, it was a cultural norm that women hold hands. And if that were taken the wrong way in a place like Russia, for example, they could be arrested for propagating homosexual relations just because they're two women who are friends, but the cultural norm is to hold hands. So this is a map of our divided world as to LGBT issues. Obviously, red bad, green good. Red being bad, mainly all of Asia and Africa. And there, the beige is no specific legislation, but that doesn't necessarily mean good. And so really looking into the micro level legislations that your client may come in having to deal with, especially if they are immigrating for work related reasons. So as you can look at the map, most of the hostile countries are in the Middle East and Northern African regions, and more than half of the world's population live in these countries. So that's key. So there are different ways that same-sex couples are targeted around the world. I gave a example about the cultural norms earlier, so we'll get into that further. And it's not simply criminalizing homosexuality, but again, having laws against propaganda. Hostility, violence, and discrimination are directed at LGBT individuals around the world daily. It's carried out in legislative, social, and cultural context in hostile countries. Anti-homosexual laws can be enforced with punishments as small as whipping, up to imprisonment, and even a death sentence. These laws can be based on sexual acts, expressions, or homosexual propaganda, with Russia being the most known for its propaganda laws. However, a majority of laws criminalizing homosexuality come from Africa, Asia Pacific, Middle East, and North Africa. Religious influence. Sharia law, the Muslim religion, prohibits same-sex sexual activity. Different Muslim countries have different interpretations and result in different outcomes. Iran's criminality of homosexual intercourse is punishable by death, and lesser acts, such as kissing, are punishable by flogging. All extramarital sex, anyone who cheats on anyone, is punishable by death in the United Arab Emirates. But however, they have never enforced it. And Qatar has enforced it, but only on Muslims. Sharia law is only enforced in part of Sudan and hasn't been enforced in Afghanistan since the Taliban rule ended. While Christianity says in the Old Testament that homosexual relations are punishable by death, It is not currently used in Christian countries to execute homosexuals. However, being that it says in the Old Testament that marriage is sacred, Eve was made for Adam, sodomy is a sin, and talks about unnatural sexual relations. Through the use of religious freedom restoration acts, it is a very prominent practice now, especially with this administration, for the government to use a combination of these verses to legally justify their discrimination. Lack of legal protection and cultural norms in hostile countries are a significant concern from a social discrimination and cultural acceptance of harassment. The fact that a nation's government will recognize same-sex marriage or won't pass discrimination laws, like here in our country, does not necessarily mean that someone who's LGBT is safe. Without legal protection from discrimination or harassment, there is reason to have concern. The citizens and government employees who are homophobic or intolerant of certain sexual orientation, identity, or expression may feel empowered to discriminate against an individual with no fear of legal redress. The absence of certain protection laws allow discrimination in areas such as housing, healthcare and employment. There are 36 countries, including Ireland and Norway, which have enacted laws to prevent speech causing incitement to hate, protecting a very small percentage of people from harassment. Well, we're on our second macro level point, cross-border considerations. Things that your client should be thinking about when traveling and the beginning aspects of estate planning. The doctrine of human rights states that everyone has the right to property, and most countries do in fact believe that the ownership of property in another country could inevitably bring LGBT members to criminalizing countries or cause their need of representation within those countries. First, start with researching the legality of homosexuality within the country of choice. It's in your client's best interest to not be public about their sexual orientation when they are not certain of how they will be treated socially and legally, especially when moving for work-related purposes, as in they had no choice in that particular country. The use of terminology such as husband and wife, spouse, whether in person or in a document, can obviously disclose to that legal system the orientation of your particular client. Legality of self-expression. As I said earlier, propaganda laws are just as prevalent and can put your client in physical and legal harm if there's miscommunication of a friendship or dating cultural norms. These laws allow a person to be homosexual but come with the belief that someone can be convinced to be homosexual. So these laws don't believe that it's a birth related issue, but yet they can be convinced to be homosexual, and so propaganda laws are meant to protect people from being convinced that they're gay. Places where self-expression is illegal are dangerous because the government does not need any actual evidence to arrest the person based on sexual orientation. They just need to hear your client say propagating words, or like I said, those two girls holding hands, a kiss on the lips, even though the cultural norms say that that's okay. So these countries are dangerous because they do not need actual evidence, but just the words they heard them say, the acts they saw them do. There are a lot of resources available to figure out these minute details. U.S. Department, State Department has guidelines for each state available at all times to inform citizens about the countries they are traveling to. Your client can register with the consulate before traveling to a state or country so that they know, so that the arrival country knows that they're coming and can keep them safe to the best of their ability. This is also a smart idea when traveling for leisure and administering of an estate or other legal complications. Under the International Covenant of Civil and Political Rights, everyone is entitled to have a right to a fair trial, a right to privacy, a right to counsel, and a right to notify their parents, and the right to humane treatment while detained. These are their legal protections. it's good practice to carry your card, to have your clients carry your card and embassy information while traveling abroad so that they can get these protections as soon as possible. Obviously, the key is helping your clients avoid international problems altogether. The most obvious way for your clients to avoid international problems is to not travel to LGBT hostile countries. But if they must go, again, through work or other related mandatory reasons, to research how best to present themselves personally in documents and utilizing all resources available to them. So safe countries is the most obvious way to avoid LGBT issues while abroad. But when traveling, one should choose a country where they feel the most comfortable conforming to their customs while maintaining who they personally are. This is not always an option, however, especially when having to move for work. But if they can, this helps protect LGBT individuals in the present time, and less amount of time spent in the country will also limit their claim of jurisdiction over the person or any property they own. Issues regarding proper expression can arise while in certain countries. A good way to know how best to dress or what is accepted in a country is by observing their LGBTQ community. If there's no information on the community, it most likely means that the country or state is an LGBT oppressive and hostile state, and your clients should act accordingly if there's a need to go. When planning a trip to another country, foreign embassies located in the U.S. are a great resource for your client and for yourself on customs and laws of the country that they represent. You can call or visit to ask them questions without fear for being arrested for your sexual orientation or for spreading LGBT propaganda. In addition, when abroad, locate the U.S. Embassy before arriving. An American citizen will be safe so long as they can make it to the embassy. Strategic planning. Plan for the worst and expect the best. It's always a great idea to have an escape plan before traveling to a foreign country. The unexpected can always happen, especially when in unknown territories. Planning ahead allows people at home to handle the estate in the case of an accident, and bring the proper documents while traveling overseas might help ensure that the person's rights and wishes are adhered to. Having the documents can also show who to ask for decisions if you are incapacitated in any way. This is especially important if your client is traveling for work alone and their partner or same-sex spouse is staying at home, something happens abroad, they have all the legal documents that allow them to be the person making decisions for their domestic partner or spouse. So international equality and unity. Globally, we're progressing far, and equality and unity around LGBT rights and probate laws. You'll have to check, however, the current state of each country when planning, because it has been a swift change, and there are social and political movements underway this year even that can change everything in 2018. The move towards removing sexual orientation-based discrimination has been a slow process. Starting in 1791, France was the first country to decriminalize same-sex relations, and the world has since slowly progressed. The LGBT rights movement finally gained momentum in the middle of the 1990s, and now today, 55% of the world lives in a country that does not criminalize homosexuality, and 10% of the world lives in a country where same-sex marriage is legalized. Countries are updating their laws to recognize equal protection of their citizens, giving marriage protection and even legalizing gay. In 2011, President Obama released the Presidential Memorandum, International Initiatives to Advance the Human Rights of Lesbians, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Persons, which directed his agencies to ensure that U.S. diplomacy and foreign assistance promote and protect the human rights of LGBT persons. This presidential memorandum has been killed as of this administration, down to the fact that even U.S. gay diplomats and dignitaries, are their spouses, even if legally married, are being denied visas in the countries that they are working in. We're currently suing and fighting that, but that is the current state of where we are, even for our own U.S. diplomats, let alone Americans traveling to and from. UN Human Rights, the United Nations has a commitment to protecting people against discrimination based on their sexual orientation and gender identity. They have offices all over the world and are collaborating with governments and organizations to educate the activists on how to aid LGBT refugees. They try to efficiently identify and reach persons of concern who need asylum, promote equal policies and legislation, and ensure the resettlement countries give fair treatment to refugees. The offices will also collect data on LGBT human rights violations, protective policies, practices, and legislation, LGBT populations, and the best practice for reaching persons who need protection. They share these practices with governments around the world and train their staff if wanted, and partner with organizations and activists to find durable solutions for LGBT refugees. Conventions and treaties is progressing more towards a unified world and likely to happen through international conventions and treaties addressing global issues individually. The National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, which hosted the Washington Convention of 73, met again in 2018 to work on their plan to unify probate codes. On the global stage, immigration, probate, and LGBT rights together, the immigration, probate, and LGBT rights needs attention and will continue to garner global commitment for changes to unify all those issues. As we mentioned earlier, activists and organizations play a huge role. There are many understandable issues that arise when trying to identify and protect LGBT individuals who live in LGBT hostile countries. And the person who is sought could be prosecuted if the wrong person finds out their sexual orientation. Outright Action International, formerly known as International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, is an organization that monitors LGBT rights around the world, documenting discrimination and other wrongs, and advocate globally from the UN down to the thousands of activists around the world. By seeking LGBT individuals, the government can see it as promoting homosexuality and prosecute the volunteer. It can be a risk for anyone to go to certain countries when they are dealing with any issue regarding LGBT and LGBT individuals. The best way to avoid conflict in these countries is to avoid going to them and to plan ahead against any potential need to interact. Estate planning and marriage equality. So marriage recognition in different countries will determine if a person automatically inherits through probate and property laws, which again are not even close to being unified around the world, what taxes will have to be paid upon the inheritance, and the level of the need to have legal documents directing your estate plan upon your estate upon your death. So it all depends on the country that we're dealing with. Family law protection provides spouses have the right to file taxes together, the right to inherit, the right to share ownership. Also, if there is no will at the time of a person's death, the spouse is the first person to whom the court will probate all of their assets and debt. Marriage removes a lot of the legal and financial burdens of losing a partner, but these rights to inherit and share are not always in favor of the spouse ahead of the state or country. The other area of family law that is very beneficial to a same-sex couple is the delegation of rights to a partner. In the event that a person becomes terminally ill or incompetent, having their partner as their durable power of attorney can ensure that they make the health and financial decisions for them, as opposed to parents or children. Also, the birth of a child and names of parents on a birth certificate are not legal grants of parental rights to both people in a same-sex family, because family law tends to require genetic material or adoption as a determinant factor. It's very important to educate your clients that being on a birth certificate is not means of parentage. An adoption decree or genetic tie is the only way to become a parent. In the United States and a small amount of nations around the world, same-sex couples may adopt and can address this problem by doing so. Currently in the United States, some states are outlawing same-sex adoption now, The federal government has said that religious institutions can deny same-sex couples based on their religious freedoms, but as it stands, in most states in the United States, same-sex couples are allowed to adopt. For most couples, especially if they're dealing internationally, assigning guardianship of the children in a will is the only way of ensuring that the child can stay with the parents. Inheritance law in relation to marriage is different by country and by state here in the U.S. Differences in marital contracts by different jurisdictions could determine the ownership of property between a married couple, with some having separate property and others having communal property. A couple should consider turning all of their property into communal property if it's not already. By having communal property, the death of one spouse will automatically grant the property of the surviving spouse without any need for legal procedures or extra taxes. There are also jurisdictions like France that do not have automatic spousal inheritance. France is one of the hardest countries to plan around. Finding out the ownership status of property determined by your client's specific jurisdiction helps you address issues before death and can help decide the specific needs of estate planning to address in the documents. Influence on tax law, marital deductions, and the allowance of gift splitting depends on the marital status between two people, as well as their individual citizenship status. The IRS will only recognize marriage for the purpose of the marital deduction of estate taxes. Tax laws can also dictate the portability of the deceased spouse's unused exclusion amount. In the U.S., for example, if the first spouse to die doesn't use up his or her individual gift estate tax exemption, the surviving spouse can use what's left. That gives the couple a total exemption of twice the individual amount. They can share that total exemption amount any way they choose, but finally, tax laws determine the taxability of spousal health insurance as well. These are all areas to consider when thinking about planning an estate while minimizing the impact of estate inheritance and income taxes that the country they're emigrating to will also take. If a same-sex couple are not considered spouses through marriage, domestic partnership, or civil union, the law does not recognize their union and families may not recognize the relationship. The person will have no way to ensure that their partner's wishes are properly executed. The notion of same-sex marriage is protected throughout the U.S. when it comes to federal protection and application of the law. However, if joined by domestic partnership or civil union, there is no guarantee that it will fit the spouse requirement in the jurisdiction controlling the person or property. This is a roadblock for plenty of immigrants who come to the U.S. because of immigration policies, and it would be naive to assume it's different anywhere else. Proper estate planning specific to the country your client is dealing with prevents complications, costs of probate, makes the deceased wishes for their property clear, and reduces taxes and other expenses. Estate planning for the binational couple. The first step to drafting an estate with two or more countries involved would be to determine the domicile of the persons involved. There may be treaties between the countries that will help you with deciding where to execute a will, how to pay the least amount in taxes, and there may be countries where you would advise your client to be cautious of even settling in due to the recognition of same-sex relationships. When starting to plan an estate for people who are from foreign countries or own property in another country, it's important to consider the conflict of laws related to domicile or citizen assets. I'm dealing with this right now in both Greece and Colombia, and the outset of my initial memo is night and day in terms of my client owning property. They inherited property, one inherited in Greece and the other in Colombia, and my advice due to the differences in law.
Esquire CLE's second verification code is SHIRT, S-H-I-R-T, SHIRT. Esquire CLE's second verification code is SHIRT, S-H-I-R-T, SHIRT. Please take a moment and write this down.
It is drastically different. The domicile of a person is where the person lives and intends to permanently remain, and until they intend to live permanently in another location and move there, their domicile will remain as their residency changes. Domicile can determine the validity of a will, and issues relating to undue influence, capacity depending on requirements of the country at the time of execution, and the distribution determined at the time of death. Situs is the legal residency of an object. For most property, the situs of the object will be where it is located and utilized. You can remove that property before death to have it located in the jurisdiction of your choice. Real estate is where situs of assets needs to be especially recognized and examined before drafting a will. The country that is jurisdiction over the estate regulates the transfer of assets and administering of an estate. After planning a will, check to make sure that it adheres to the laws of the jurisdiction it will be administered. Most civil jurisdictions do not recognize the concept of a trust or allow complete freedom of wills. Some countries' laws even impose forced heirship on estates, allowing you to dictate where some of the assets are distributed and the government dictating how the rest of the assets will be distributed. Finally, it's important to know what a person is able to grant in an estate to pick which documents are to be prepared, allowing maximum control over one's distribution of their rights and assets. Estate planning is key. The country that has jurisdiction over the estate regulates the transfer of assets and the administering of the estate. Now, treaties. The U.S. has tax treaties with 16 other countries. These treaties allow the country where the U.S. citizen owns property to tax that property. If the U.S. taxes the estate, then it has to provide a credit to the estate owner to cover the amount of the property taxation by the country where the property is located. The language of the treaties vary country to country. For example, to use France as an example, the U.S. has a right to tax property owned by U.S. citizens in France. This means that the potential exists that the property being that the potential exists of the property being taxed both by France and the U.S. However, France can only tax the property itself. Other property, including possessions inside the house, a Renoir, Oriental rug, may only be taxed by the U.S. Tax laws are different in each country, and without a treaty, both countries' tax laws must be considered when deciding how to plan your client's estate. Factors such as domicile, situs, and nationality are taken into account when determining what taxes will be applied when your client passes away. Some countries, including LGBT hostile countries, also include religion as a consideration for tax laws relating to the distribution of the estate. So this needs to be addressed on an individual basis. Maybe we don't want it known that your client is gay because the religious consideration may change how the government views the entire administration of the estate, leading to marriage recognition. In a country, marriage recognition will determine the marital exemptions in inheritance and gift laws. Additionally, it will determine the executor of an estate if there is no will. In probate law, the first successor to property upon the death of a person who did not have a will is their spouse. If there is no recognition of the marriage in the foreign country, the estate will be assigned to a relative and not the quote-unquote spouse. Even when there is marriage recognition, the marriage laws of a country should be examined to make sure that there is not a religious exemption. The marital regime of the jurisdiction in which they married determines the property rights between the people. Sharia law has additional complications in dealing with estate planning with countries that follow Sharia law. Accordingly, depending on the presence of children, a husband can inherit up to half of the wife's estate, and a wife can only inherit up to a quarter of her husband's estate, along with all transferable property. However, the law forbids same-sex marriage, so the spouse of a deceased will be entitled to none of the estate upon the partner's death. Additionally, only one-third of a person's estate is allowed to be granted by means of a will, and the other two-thirds is determined by bloodline of the deceased. Accounting for all of the factors and conditions, inheritance under Sharia law allows a same-sex spouse to receive a max of one-third of their spouse's estate, and only if they are listed in a recognized and written will, and not simply listed as their spouse. In the U.S., here in America, immigration status affects inheritance and gift tax exemptions. The inheritance tax in the U.S. is on the estate and not the recipient of the estate. If the person who passes away is not a U.S. citizen by birth or green card, or could be considered domiciled in the U.S., there is no estate tax or income tax from an inheritance. There are strict laws mandating that the person declare the inheritance as gift tax are different by depending on the citizenship of the recipient of the gift. There is no gift tax between spouses if both are U.S. citizens, but there is an annual $100,000 exemption to gift taxes if the recipient is not a citizen. There are specific considerations if your client owns property in multiple countries. For things such as real estate, the country that it is located in will dictate how it is inherited. Determine the status of the asset first. You may be able to do a multi-jurisdictional will or an international will, but if the country is not LGBT friendly, you want to do a multiple single jurisdictional will so as to not prevent the surviving partner in danger or lose, so as to not put the surviving partner in danger or lose the property completely. Probate laws, like everything else related to estate planning, differ from country to country. Most property assigned in a will can be moved to the country of their choice while they are alive. But real estate in multiple countries heightens the necessity of estate planning because foreign property is subject to the laws in that country that it is located. If there is real estate in another country and that owner passes away without a will, it will be up to the probate laws of that country and they may not recognize the marriage of your client. Writing in a will is extremely important in these situations. There are three main options for drafting multiple wills if there is property in several jurisdictions. A multiple jurisdiction will can address the applicable laws of all countries associated with the property or persons. However, multi-jurisdictional wills have the ability to be invalidated if there are contradictory provisions. Perhaps a contradictory provision in religious law where the multiple jurisdictional will references a same-sex couple as being married and leaving loved ones to deal with international probate court proceedings, which cost tens of thousands of dollars and last years. Again, if the countries involved are members of the Washington Convention of 74, then an international will can ensure that the estate is distributed fairly and with the least amount of worries and save most of the provisions, even if there are some that are invalidated. Under the Uniform International Wills Act, international wills are valid against the members of the Washington Convention. A will will be considered international, quote unquote, so long as it is in writing, witnessed by two persons, and a person authorized to act in connection with international wills only has one testator, the testator's signature is at the end, and the authorized person attaches a certification. These wills can be kept in registry with the state under confidentiality until a death certificate is presented for release. Finally, estate planning can result in the creation of multiple single jurisdictional wills. By having these separate wills, the invalidation by one jurisdiction still leaves you with the other wills to utilize. Each will have to be tailored to the application of laws, conflict of laws of the respective countries, and be drafted carefully to avoid conflicts between them. In LGBT hostile countries, LGBT couples should try to keep most of their property in the U.S. so that they can designate it to their partner. When they cannot bring to the United States, what they cannot bring to the United States will likely fall under the jurisdiction of the LGBT hostile country. Using multiple single jurisdictional wills allows you to get as much of the estate as possible from the property left behind, does not expose your sexual orientation within the country by using a word such as spouse, and allows the rest of the estate to be handled by another will. Once again, how and when you execute a will depends on the country that the grantor or the specific assets belong to. For example, using an American will in France is likely to obtain extra costs associated with the translation and accompanying apostille. It would be wise to execute and register a French translated copy before death. When involving the English-speaking United Kingdom, being a common law jurisdiction, they will typically accept American wills on face value if presented after death. By comparing the reaction of two very close American allies, it's obvious that after determining what country's laws you will need to follow to administer an estate, that you aid your client to reach their response to foreign wills. If they accept international wills, they will accept it before or after a person's death, but filing an executed will before death is always better so you can address any contradictions or translation issues while still alive and able. The domicile of the deceased in many common law jurisdictions will determine what laws regulate the distribution of their non-real estate property, their tangible items. This is not an absolute because it is decided by the laws of each country, the domicile of the person, and the status of the assets. Immigration policies, in conclusion, immigration policies affect the flow of humans from country to country. There are issues now more than ever that need to be worked out. But when someone successfully gains access to a country or becomes a citizen, it places them in their jurisdiction. Recognition of marriage will help define the word spouse when immigrating or planning an estate. In the United States, same-sex couples qualify as spouses for tax purposes of an estate, but it is not that in the case in every country. When dealing with certain countries, it would be dangerous to the surviving partner to even put the word in a will. Estates of binational couples. When planning an estate for a binational couple client, determine the domicile of each to figure out the country's laws that you want to follow. And finally, when dealing with real property and wills, for non-movable property, determine the situs of the asset for your client. You may be able to execute multi-jurisdictional wills or an international will, but if the country is not LGBT-friendly or downright hostile, you can execute multiple single jurisdictional wills so as to not put your client's surviving partner in danger or lose the property completely. So that is the end of this seminar. Here are some references and authorities that you can go through and look up. If you have any questions whatsoever for me, you can feel free to email me at Angela@ChiampoloLaw.com. And it was a pleasure going over this topic with you today.